First of all, good morning to everybody. It's Monday, January 24th, 2011. And I want to say good morning to those in front of me and to the many listening across the expanse of the great world. I want to make one small correction. Last week, I was saying something quickly, and I realized later I left out a connecting link. If you recall, I spoke about Richard Joel using the term to do a Jewish act. And I mentioned, I said the Lubavitcher Rebbe, listen to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It was the Rub's Rebbe in Cheder who was a Lubavitcher Chassid, that was an einikel of the first Rebbe. And he used to say, Tuta Poshet Nzach, Abol Tutas mit Chassidish, do a simple act. But do it with feeling, do it with emotion. And that's what I was quoting. It's a small correction, but I tripped over my tongue when I was speaking off the cuff. Anyway, I just wanted to correct, because it was not the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but a Lubavitcher Chassid who was the Rebbe. It was Rabbi Baruch Reisberg, the Rebbe's Rebbe in Cheder. Now, last week we spoke about, and anyone who deals with Torah Jewry today and deals with the masses knows how true this is. Most individuals, what they lack is a concept of surrender, a concept that there's a halakha, a concept that there is a law that commands obedience. And we all know that in the Western world, this is lacking. The beauty of the Western world, I would say the most crucial word is the word freedom, and the way they interpreted it means total freedom. And the interview with the Chabadnik, Professor Velvel Green, his name, by the way, I would imagine is William, I'm just guessing, but Velvel comes from Zev, and generally speaking, William, it would be William Green, because Rabbi Rubin said, how could he have a name Velvel? But you see, that's the name he uses. But it may very well be, when you check back in time, you'll find that his given name was William. I'd be surprised if I'm incorrect on this guess. Anyway, his interview is just magnificent, how they keep kosher in the house, he eats treif at work, and there's never a concept of surrender at that stage in his life. And of course, this is our tremendous problem, and as time marches on and we're more at home, the intermarriage and the intersimulation, the raising of children with dual religion, the Christmas party, the Easter eggs, and all this is part of the world today. And if you notice, the Reform and Conservative movement have broken down many barriers. At one time, you couldn't be a member of a conservative synagogue if you're intermarried. I believe today that many an intermarried couple are members of conservative synagogues. I understand that they won't do the marriage, but they'll accept them as members today. In the Reform movement, it's probably over 50% of the rabbis today who will perform intermarriages. And I showed you, even with breakaways in the Orthodox world, and people who are on the fringe, but people who have once learned and are personally observant, you find too, I quoted to you from those articles, how they allow the intermarried people, they don't give them an aliyah, but they can go up, stand up near the Torah, they can stand up with the bat mitzvah boy, stand up with the bat mitzvah boy. And this total breakdown affects all of us, affects us in the rabbinate, it affects us statistically. And while the inner core is stronger than ever, and more powerful than ever, and more observant than ever, the outer core is more assimilating and more intermarried. And it's true in the Gola, to a certain degree it's true in Israel, not with the same extremes, but with the lack of knowledge of Yiddishkeit, it is exactly a replay of what's going on everywhere in the world. The inner core, stronger than ever, and the outer core knows less than ever about Torah Hashem Tamima. And the example Rabbi Rubin said yesterday, how we attended a wedding in Aser B'Tevet, and it was a Reform rabbi performing the wedding. 40, 50 years ago, you would not have had something like that in the state of Israel. People might have not been religious, but if they needed a rabbi, they knew who to turn to. 50 years later, that entire feeling is totally lost. It's a third generation already, a fourth generation removed from Torah, mitzvot, and Yiddishkeit, and the reminiscence of youth that Ben Gurion had, that Shazar had, that Ben Zvi had, that Golda Meir had, is totally lacking in today's generation. Okay. Now, I want to ask a simple question. I spent the entire year dealing with the Reform Movement, the Conservative Movement. We dealt with the Conservative Movement in great detail. We went into the teachings, the writings of all their leaders, from Solomon Schechter to Mordechai Kaplan, to Levi Ginsberg, to of course what happens later with Professor Louis Finkelstein, with Rabbi Avraham Yehoshua Heschel, professor of Jewish philosophy, theology. We went in, of course, in great detail to Rabbi Shaul Lieberman and his shtans, and we traced the movement with all its chancellors, ins and outs. So many a cynic will say, what is Rakefet wasting his time on? Who cares? Why is it of interest to us? Torat Hashem Tamima. They want to hear Rakefet speak about the Das Torah and all that goes with it, and the infinitely more important, and we'll reach it, Be'ezrat Hashem. But why? Why did I spend so much time? And here I have to say, and I say this with great pain, I've lost many a sleepless night on this very topic, because the conservative movement of 1902 and all that subsequently happened, in my opinion, may not be ancient history. It may be a replay before our very eyes, and the comparisons at times are absolutely frightening. Now, let me make something clear. I don't want to say that all that's happened in Chovevei Torah is incorrect. I don't want to say that every student who goes to Chovevei Torah, went to Chovevei Torah, or has ordination to Chovevei Torah, is not a firm Jew. As you all recall, the seminary in its early years turned out many, many from Rabbanim. The classic example is the chief rabbi of the British Empire, who went on to become such a famed figure and left the Doye Sharim Yevorach in his own family, and Chas v'Chalila, anyone would call Chief Rabbi Hertz a conservative rabbi. And there are many examples from the 20th century. I don't have to go any further than my own professor of homiletics, Herbert S. Goldstein. Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein was far from a conservative rabbi. As a matter of fact, of all the people on the yeshiva faculty, he was the only one, to my recollection, who to a certain degree identified with Agudat Yisrael. Rabbi Leo Young identified more with Poli Agudat Yisrael, and the Mizrahi, Rabbi Joseph H. Lukstein, certainly identified with the Mizrahi and not Agudat Yisrael, and Rabbi Herbert S. Eat Gesundheit. I don't know who that's for. What's your first name?
Ezra,
is that for you? Eat Gesundheit as I speak. Enjoy breakfast. You're reading me, Danny, and Herbert S. Goldstein identified with Agudat Yisrael to a certain degree.
Did he
have smicha? Beyond, yeah, he had smicha from Rabbi Jaffe, if I'm not Rabbi Shalom Jaffe on the west side. You can check it out in his grandson's biography of him.
Those are the three people the Rav said.
Yeah, these are the three people that I called in my book that the Rav said that when he said to Beryl Rosenzweig, when you were growing up, who were your heroes? The big three, Rabbis Lukstein, Goldstein, and Young. And today, who are your son's heroes? That's Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig, the Reshi Yeshiva. Okay, so I want to make clear. Yes, Moshe.
Because GTS was more job-oriented.
No. Do me a favor. Listen to my sherman. You have to hear this. Not this has to be understood from within. But there's no question that JTS began as an Orthodox institution. It began in rebellion to the Reform, And there's no question that the original charter of 1887 was in total consonance with Torah and tradition. I showed it black and white, and I showed it from within. But then we come to the tremendous problem. And this problem came up yesterday in my meeting with the stylist. Here, the stylist takes my work, and she reaches the chapter where I'm dealing with a mitzvah that my wife and I have that I've yet to meet anyone else has the same mitzvah. I'm boasting now. Forgive me for boasting. You'll see why I'm boasting. If not today, you'll see next week. We have a mitzvah pidyon shvuyim. That's not a simple mitzvah. To have the branch of the Mossad that I worked for say to me, "Kol hakavod," and the Mossad people were overwhelmed with what I did. Ani moda l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. So when we started working for this family to get them out of Russia, they were in refusal from 73 to 86. We started working to try to get them out in 81. Okay? So I learned very quickly that in order to talk with congressmen, senators, and afterwards Jewish leaders, and ultimately billionaire businessmen, you have to give them a sheet. If I may quote the Yiddish, "Man kann nicht reden in Welterein." You can't stamm talk, and you have to give them something tangible. So I drew up a sheet on the SS family, ESSAS, a very famous refusnik, the first, I would say, again, it's very hard to say the first, but certainly the first well-known Baal Tshuva in communist Russia who was not Chabad. Had the Russians let him out when he first applied in 73, he would have been a very fine secular Jew like many other Jews living in the state of Israel. But because they kept him in refusal, he started to seek and search. Why am I in refusal? Why does a Jew suffer? Why do the communists hate us? Why do they have this enmity for religion? What is our religion about? Where does Zionism come from? And ultimately he comes to religion, and the rest is history. Now, in my sheet on Essas, the stylist notices that I call him Elia and I call him Ilya. And she wanted me to remain constant. So I told her, first of all, she can't correct anything I'm quoting from the sheet because the sheet is published. There may very well be a picture of it in the book. Once you have a published document, you can't change it. That's number one. But number two, I told her, I purposely use Elia and Ilya interchangeably because it represents us. We all live in two worlds. We're out of the ghetto. We spoke about this months ago when we began our lectures on Reform and Conservative Judaism. We Orthodox Jews, everyone outside the state of Israel, maybe in Israel it's possible there's some little pockets in Meir Sharim and B'nai Brak where Jews live where they're totally within a ghetto. But we live with a dual existence, and we are both Elia and Ilya at the same time. And there's nothing to be ashamed of in using your Gentile name. And that's why occasionally I will say to David, David, occasionally David. I will call Yehuda Eugene Yehuda. Why? It's a Ramban in No, you tell me the Pasha. Pasha Bo HaChodesh Hazel Lechem Rosh Chadashim. And the Ramban asked a simple question. Why are all the months on the Jewish calendar Chaldean names, alien names? I don't know if you're an expert in Semitic languages, you may even find that they're names that are a derivative of idols. Avodah Zarah, exactly. And Tammuz, and who knows, Tevet, and Kislev. And we have names in Tanakh, Kodesh Ziv. Right or wrong, we can come up. Baruch Hashem, the Var HaLashon of Medinat Yisrael that came up with Mikshuv, right or wrong, a Makshev, all these modern words that we use, Mishkafayim, whoever saw the word Mishkafayim in the Mishnah, all the Parva happens to be in the Gemara and Tamid, but how they pulled it out of the Gemara and used a suburb, Parva. So, Ribbono Shel Olam, you don't think that our Gedolei Halashon, the Baal Shanim, which is also a modern word, you follow me, Mendel? Ribbono Shel Olam, Ezra, we could come up with so many beautiful words, and yet we use Kislev, Tevez, Shvat, Ribbono Shel Olam, what a wonderful Shaila. And the Ramban says so beautifully, to remind the Jew where he came from. We have to be cognizant, you know, we can't be arrogant, we have to know where we came from, who we are, where we're going, and I don't want to go any further, because on this Ramban, the Chatam Sofer has an unbelievable drasha, which I've used many times. Sometimes they get bouquets, sometimes they get stoned, because you know what the Chatam Sofer derives, that Liasid Lavo, B'Yamot HaMashiach, we will observe Yontif Sheni Shel Golus in Eretz Yisrael, Zeicha, to where we came from, what we went through. It's a famous drasha of the Chatam Sofer. You have to understand it in context when he was saying it and why he was saying it. But I have to tell you, so when I give that drasha, it's amazing. Some people will say to me, "Oh, Rebbe, I wish we had Yontif Sheni. We had a chance in the Golar. You could have a first Seder where you slept and a second Seder where the woman recovered from all the work. Here, it's one Seder. Before you know it, it's over." Other people say to me, "Rebbe, you're an idiot. We got rid of Yontif Sheni. It's a pleasure. Why do you have to quote a Chatam Sofer and give me a guilt conscience that we're going to bring it back?" Anyway, we will see. We will see. What is your name? I had the name, but I don't know who comes and doesn't. Noach Small. Did I write it down? Noach, you know, I told you, the last name Small is a very important name. That's Reb Moshe Feinstein's family. So yeah, sure, Small was a brother-in-law. So if you're related to Reb Moshe Feinstein, with that and $2.25, you can buy a ticket to get onto the subway in New York. Anyway, if it's running, the snow there, who knows what's going on? Noach, you see, so we all live with dual existence, and then I showed you the challenge. Gev, I said to you the words of the Rav, Gev v'tosha v'nochi machem, and the words of the Rav that. On one hand, we're Gerim, we're not part of the world. On the other hand, Tosha, we're part of the world. We read the New York Times. We are involved in medicine. We are involved in dentistry. We are involved in computerization. We are involved in all this tremendous advancement of the human race. We are involved in money and investments in the stock market. And I remember I had a very dear friend. He was born exactly the year I was born, the Manchester, second year in the major leagues. And he's a Wallenberg saved his life, friend, Ivan Gluck. So I remember one time we were comparing what we do with the New York Times. So it's interesting. Both of us read about Israel first. That's the first thing we looked for in the New York Times, if there's any news on Israel. Then I went to the sports pages and he went to the financial pages. You understand the difference. And he couldn't believe I had no interest in finance, but a normal person, we live in two worlds. Okay. The challenge, of course, is how to keep our Torah world intact and how to separate the two, not to allow the Toshop to influence the Ger. And this is the tremendous challenge that we face outside of the ghetto. The Besamim Rosh, what he alluded to yesterday, you can't start to appreciate what I quoted about shaving, where he lets his hair down. And that's a classic example. Already at the dawn of coming out of the ghetto, he is between the lines, calling our attention to this conflict that will haunt us. Now, you all recall, with JTS, and you make an initial compromise, and one compromise leads to another. We have tremendous problems today, that there's a swing to the right, nobody can deny. There is a swing to the right, that it has alienated some fine, upright, decent, good-thinking people. It's absolutely a fact. It has alienated them. And the example I gave you yesterday in passing, when we spoke about the Racher Adachinom, is a very powerful example. Because if a person will look at the last few years of the Torah world, could you imagine tuasa, the drinking of water? Tuasa, all kinds of vegetables, but not just all kinds of vegetables, the vegetables that are the healthiest vegetables there are. Then suddenly the war broke out about strawberries. I see signs up already before Tu B'Shvat how every last fruit and everything you're going to eat, and it has to be checked in fear of bugs. And I don't know, I've been eating fruit all my life. I don't recall seeing bugs. Of course, you open up a peach, you open up an apple. I haven't seen it in years, but at one time you might find a worm. All right, you cut it away and threw it away. The halacha tells you what to do. But I never heard any fear of something that's microscopic, that you don't even see. If you're going to worry about what you can't see, I mean, they chew it of the Avnei Nezer, but I told you, take a drop of water, put it under a microscope, you'll never drink water again. No, you'll never drink water again. You won't be alive at the end of 48 hours, 72 hours. And it goes on and on. And then with the fish, what happened just a few months ago, and it's quieted down, but I
that was a company discussion in the...
Yeah, no, but say there, it's very, you understand, so that there's a swing to the right. And again, I give you the example, you want to know what bothers me the most, you talk about a swing to the right, it's something you don't even give a hoot about. And yet, when I saw it, I was flabbergasted that there could be such chutzpah in this generation. And I was happy when Tova Lichtenstein told me she reacted the same way. What am I talking about? The YU-based medrash. When you walk in and everyone turns to Amsterdam Avenue when they start davening because that's east, and they turn away from the Aron HaKodesh, I couldn't believe my eyes. I saw the Rav davening. I know the Shaila, I'm not an Amaritz. I know the Tshuvat Achronim. I know what goes on the Shaila. I know about building a shul. I know the questions. I know how much ink has been wasted on it. But Halacha L'maaseh in the YU Beit Medrash, G'dolei Olam, everyone davened facing the Aron HaKodesh. No one turned to Amsterdam Avenue, not the Rav, and not Rav David Lipschitz, and not the Mashgiach, Rav Yaakov Moshe Kohen Lesson, and not Rav Yeruchim Gerelik. And by the way, he did teach in the yeshiva, and Rav Nedroich Bornstein, and Rav Shmuel Leiser Volk, and give any name you want from the Dolei Rosh Yeshiva. And I'm told the earlier generation that I didn't see, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Revel, and Rabbi Aronoff, and all the Gedolim, Asher Ba'aretz, and Rabbi Weil, who they used to call the Klein de Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Yehuda Weil, and he was a little man, I'm told, Azat Tzadik. It's overwhelming, the stories I've heard about him. And they all faced the Aron HaKodesh, and suddenly a new generation comes along of young schnips who were raised in America, never saw Europe. And among them are fine, Lamdanim are fine, they're Lamdanim, but our Lamdan has to have a feeling of their heritage to the previous generation, a feeling of humility. Mi ani mani, you're comparing yourself to the Rav, you're comparing yourself to the Tzufalka, how dare you? And change, and then you and everyone, so all right, there's a swing to the right. But so it creates a counter reaction. And when you create a counter-reaction, the ball starts to roll. It's like a snowball down a hill. And here you have to be very careful what we can accept and what we can't accept. And when I look at some of the innovations that are going on in the world that began Chovev VeTorah and all that came out of it so far, I frankly am very frightened. I hope I am wrong, but I see here the inception of what ultimately will become a new type of conservative Judaism. As I said, at this point in time, we have to be done lekach zchut, and I'm not willing to say everything is no good and every rabbi is no good. But let me give you tangible examples of what frightens me, and I challenge Rabbi Rubin to justify halachically the examples I'm going to give. The most basic example of all is JOFA, J-O-F-A, Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance. There's no question that when men began withholding Gittin, it was a crime against humanity, a crime against Torah, a crime against all that is sacred. In living in the dual world, the message we get from the Toshav is money is honey and money counts, and I encourage you to read my new book when it comes out. They refuse to give a get. They want money, yeah. Honey, etc., etc. No, this gave birth to a tremendous outcry. And Blue Greenberg made that famous statement, if there's a rabbinic will, there is a halachic way. My dear students, saying if there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way, is a restatement of Reform Judaism. Torah works within a certain system. Naseh v'nishma. We can't have a woman divorce a man. It is a man that divorces a woman. This is an open concept in the Torah. It's not rabbinic, it's not a gezeira, it's not a takana, it's a d'oraita. And here you have a classic example. And believe me, I would take action against the men. I am a conservative. I am an extremist. I am not a liberal. I have no difficulty. As a matter of fact, the one time, that's nothing.
Don't let him leave the country.
No. You're talking Israel. I'm talking America. This all began in America. I have no problem getting in touch with the Sak Magoon squad and arranging what has to be arranged. I did it one time, and believe me, the guy gave a get the next day. And the police are in cooperation. You should know that America.
The problem is Blue Greenberg has gentlemen,
no wise comments. I'll get to everything. Just wait a minute. So it's not that I don't understand the problem.
The NYPD is in relationship with the
South
Brooklyn squad.
We know as a fact, I don't know the inner workings, but this much I can tell you. When a guy is found in a Staten Island cemetery with a note on his coat, when he wakes up in the morning all bloodied and bruised, and the note reads, if you don't give a get within 48 hours, the next time you will not wake up, the police don't do a thing. Because they understand exactly what has happened. And you can check it out. You can check it out. Satma has some power in New York. It's not powerless. This I know.
Do they advertise
with the papers? No. You have to know how to reach them. You don't advertise this. It's done because. But I'm trying to tell you.
It's only done for their own group.
No. It's not only for their own group. That's
really?
The thing. That's what I'm telling you. If you show them a psak and you hire them, they know what to do. So it's not that I'm indifferent to the problem. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I feel the problem 1,000,000%. I just got involved. The student dragged me in. The first thing I told them is, no matter what happens, you have to give your wife a get and you have to give it in dignity. Everything else will be worked out. There'll be tremendous argument and controversy. Their children involved. I think you're crazy for separating, but the woman wants out. Whatever is involved is involved. But the first thing I told him, he must give a get. And any responsible rabbi that I know, no matter how difficult a divorce situation is, and believe me, it is not simple, because they're two human beings, they're children, there's joint property, there's hatred, there's enmity, there's foolishness, there are false expectations, there's no lack of reality and ability to compromise, all that goes into divorces. But the first thing, you must give a get. The get is not negotiable. Those are the words that I use, and I can tell you many of my colleagues use exactly the same words. A get is not negotiable. You have to give a get. Everything else can be negotiated. You're not going to win it all. You're not going to lose it all. Unfortunately, there's no winner here outside of the lawyers, the accountants, and the psychiatrists and psychologists. They're the real winners, the therapists. But outside of that, everyone loses. But this is the reality today. You can't reason, and people make up their minds, and they have their own life. I don't want to repeat the words I've heard. Some of it is justified, some of it is not. But this is what goes on. But you see, this feminist drive later gets involved with a terrible situation with the Queen's davening that Shabbos, where this woman who I know and has been through a terrible accident and is crippled as a result and is lucky to be alive, a car accident, she finally has a bat mitzvah for her daughter. And her own son was my Talmud in the Kollel, and believe me, he was not like his parents, much more to the right. But fine, she was a feminist, she wanted a Torah, she wanted to make her own prayer group. Anyway, I can't comment on what happened in America. I can only tell you I would have taken a different position. My own attitude was, when it came to women's prayer groups, and I've said this many times, I'm certainly opposed. That's not within the core of tradition. But if women insist, let them do it halachically. I wouldn't go. I wouldn't stand on the barricades and make a tremendous issue out of it, because if women want to go into a separate room in davening, it's not any different than years ago in the ghetto, where women couldn't read, and one woman would get up and lead the davening, and everyone would answer after her. So fine, I would not have made a case. Turned out that the rabbin in Queens did make a case, and they explained to me it had to do also with the conservative movement. At that time, the rabbin in Queens, the conservative movement, was very traditional, and the conservative movement pleaded with them, if you allow this to happen, we're going to have women aliyot in our synagogues, we're going to have women this, women that, it's going to create tremendous pressure. If the Orthodox do it, we can do it. And this was part of the reason they took a strong stand, although many admitted to me privately that my approach doesn't mean anything, but they found out Rabbi Lichtenstein had my approach. So suddenly I became a hero. Oh, Rabbi Lichtenstein says exactly what you say. I said, I'm happy to hear that. But they said there were other factors. Now, that event that happened years ago gave birth to it. It empowered the Jaffa movement. Until then, Jaffa was very quiet and small, and suddenly hundreds turned out. And then, of course, you go further, you get involved. I don't want to go through the whole
thing. Amaritz, what actually happened on Shabbat? It was
amazing. In Hillcrest, in Rabbi Simcha Krause's shul, and Rabbi Simcha Krause, Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner. Over the years, Rabbi Simcha Krause broke with his Rebbe. It all goes back to St. Louis when he organized the day school, and the only way the day school could get off the floor, this is what I was told, would be to have boys and girls together. And Rav Putnam said, Yehurig v'al Yava, he broke with his Rebbe, and little by little he moved more left, which he's entitled. Rabbi Simcha Krause is a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and there's plenty of room within the spectrum of Torah to be right, center, left, okay? And that Shabbos, he permitted the women to take a Sefer Torah and make their—I don't know where it was—in the house, in a different room in the shul, whatever—and go and make your own minyan for the bat mitzvah. And it was made halachically without birchat the Torah. In other words, okay, according to what the Rav said, Rav Meisher said.
Right.
Okay. So but the queen. No. Chas v'chalila. It was made halachically.
What does that mean, halachically?
The Rav's psak, Rav Meisher's psak. A lady laying from the Torah, but they didn't actually have a
aliyah.
How
did she have a bat mitzvah?
She doesn't need an aliyah. What's a bat mitzvah in aliyah? But she showed. She knows how to read from the Torah. She showed.
She's the one that did the reading.
I would imagine it was the bat mitzvah girl who did the reading. Absolutely.
All right.
But nothing.
What was the reaction? All community?
No. So the rabbinate held a meeting. And it was by unanimous vote, only two votes in favor, Rabbi Simcha Krause and the rabbi of Great Neck,
Polakoff.
My student,
Dale Polakoff,
who went to BMT. They were the only two who voted in favor. The entire Queens rabbinate voted against them. And then Rabbi Heschel Schechter came out with a psak and four NYU Rosh Yeshiva signed on. It became a cause celebre.
And because of the conservatives in
Queens, I'm told, yes, because Zilberberg, the Rabbanim, what happened.
Yeah, and now all those schools are completely
Right, because they're completely egalitarian. But at that point, that's what they said. They said that, yes, they care.
And
because
Queens cared what happened to conservatives?
That's what I was told. I wasn't there. I cannot tell you what I was told, that one of the factors involved in the general attitude was that the conservative rabbinate, among them, as you know, the rabbi of Hillcrest, all his kids are YU kids, 100% from, 100% from, and their other synagogues, and they were frightened stiff, because if you say the Orthodox permitted a woman's prayer group with Torah reading, and you don't go, so we certainly can permit it with everything that goes with it. Okay.
Anyway, it started to move.
So they read the Torah without anyone getting an aliyah?
As far as I know, they didn't have any aliyah. They didn't say Kedusha. They didn't say Kaddish. But the women showed they knew how to lead the prayer. They knew how to daven. They knew how to read the Torah.
So they davened everything except anything?
Except Rav Shapir Kedusha. I don't know what you're asking. It's Rav Moshe's children. It's the Rav. It's Rabbi Riskin. This has all been written. This has all been written. Rav Moshe has a printed children, of course. No, I don't want to go into all these details now. I think I dealt with it years ago. But Rav Moshe and the Rav are both quoted that they're not happy about women's prayer groups. But if the women insist, they should do it without Dovah Shepherd Kedusha. And therefore, if B'dieved, it's not Nachat Chilak, you have to quote them correctly. And Rabbi Riskin quoted the Rav. And Rabbi Riskin, there was a tremendous outcry against him because he quoted the Rav as if it was Lachat Chilak. And the story with Rabbi Riskin, the Rav was as a B'dieved, because Rabbi Riskin told the Rav, if I don't do it, the women will go to the conservative temple. So the Rav told them, well, if you have no choice, this is the way to do it. And I heard this from ear witnesses who were there when the Rav met with Rabbi Riskin. He came to see him in his apartment, and he presented the problem to him. And I know the Gabayim who heard the way the Rav answered. And Rav Moshe certainly makes clear that it's not a lachat chila, but with the other, at least that's what Rav Moshe is quoted. And it seems that this is correct. Okay. Anyway, that issue gave birth afterwards. You forgot there was a da. My classmate, Rabbi Saul Berman. And I always felt that Rabbi Saul Berman knew that there's a boundary. His father was a Slobodka Rav. He's a Torah V'das boy from high school. Again, there's this syndrome that Rav Kepler has called attention to. Yeshiva University's biggest mistake was allowing kids in from Brooklyn. No kid should have ever been allowed in from Brooklyn. I once said this in Chicago, and someone took me seriously.
It's a Bronx bomber.
You can't believe it. Someone gave me an argument afterwards. You know, what do you mean? And I looked at him. I said, don't you have a sense of humor? But you know what I'm trying to say. The kids who came in from Tehra V'Das, the kids who came in from Chaim Berlin, they were overwhelmed by the freedom in Yeshiva University. You need examples. Irving Greenberg, Duvi Hartman, Saul Berman. You can go one by one. No, I'm saying.
You're laying the groundwork for something bad coming.
Yeah, something very bad, Yitzchak. Very bad. Okay. Yeah, so you see, it gave birth to Eidah. Eidah already gave birth to Chovevei Torah. Chovevei Torah gave birth to rabbinic fellowship. But it goes beyond that. Rabbi Avi Weiss already became more aggressive than anyone. And you see already what Rabbi Avi Weiss permitted. So you see what I'm worried about. And I'll give
it's a slow. To,
exactly. It's more than yeah, it's a snowball.
The rabbinic fellowship refused to allow women as members.
I'm well aware of it. But what you're not quoting is, if you read it well, they refuse to allow women as members for now. Underline the word for now and try to compare that with the way conservative rabbis spoke in the 1920s when they also used the word for now. Now, these three issues come to the fore on three different levels that affect us right now. One of them, of course, is feminism. The second one is homosexuality. And the third one is pluralism. And here it could very well be, and I say it up front, that this is a counter-reaction to the swing to the right. Howard Jonas, who I've never met, but I'm told is a Yirat Tzaddik, a wonderful, generous, decent individual. As you recall, at the Chovevei Torah dinner where he gave them $25 million, made the famous statement, I don't forgive Rabbis Schechter and Willick for robbing my dream. I believe, if I'm not quoting him verbatim, at least I'm quoting the idea. And what did he mean by that? Was that he feels that they were the ones that had this influence in YU and led it to the right, and they're the ones, whatever may be, perhaps they instituted davening facing Amsterdam Avenue. I don't know, I'm thinking aloud. But in his mindset, They represented the swing to the right. And here you have this tremendous counter-reaction. And here's where we have to be very careful. We can't let the Toshav overwhelm us. Look what happened to the conservative movement. Look what happened to someone like Solomon Schechter, who comes from a Chabad background. His name is...
We already established that that doesn't mean a thing.
What do you mean it doesn't mean a thing?
Because look all the Chabad makes who had people drive in Shabbos and grow up their clothes.
One second. Don't compare the Chabad movement to what happened in JTS. Chabad had certain psakim. We all face the problem. What do you do with people who drive on Shabbos? But look what happened with this thrust on feminism. We have to be able to draw the line. Example, simple, tangible example. In Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Hartman, David Hartman, call him what you wish, Professor Hartman, someone who I so looked up to 60 years ago as a student in the yeshiva, someone who was a Talmud, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, Rabbi Aaron Kutler. So Rabbi Hartman, his institute, gave birth to the Shira Chadasha Minyan. His daughter organized it. He gave the rabbinic approval. Now, what do you have in Shira Chadasha? You have women leading the davening when Davisha Pekadusha is not said. You have women doing the laning. You have women having aliyot. I'm told that Shabbos morning it's standing room only at Shira Chadasha. Kabbalat Shabbat and Tu Baruch Hu, a woman leads the davening. Shabbos morning, they don't begin, listen to these words, you're going to learn a formal term for it later, coined by a student of this very Kollel. Shabbos morning, they don't begin the davening until there are 10 men and 10 women. A woman leads the davening until Yishtabach. Psukei Dezimra. The Aliyah.
When it comes to Kolisha.
When it comes to the Aliyot, you have Kohen Levi Yisrael, then you have three women, then you have, if a man gets Achron, a woman gets Maftir. If a woman gets Achron, a man gets Maftir. Women read the Torah, the Bim is accessible from both the men's section, the women's section. Look what happened.
Is there a
Of course. Everyone has a mechitza. Rabbi Avi Weiss attempted to emulate this past summer. You all know, you all heard. And he had a woman lead the Kabbalat Shabbat following the innovation of Shira Chadasha, which transferred to Drishar in New York. And Avi Weiss did it once. He has not done it again, not because he doesn't want to, but because there was a rebellion within from the Balabatim on the ground. That's what I am told. So once again, he has to hold off. The rabbis are running ahead of the pack, and they have to hold off. Now, in my humble opinion, I was asked and embarrassed in front of very important people in the King David Hotel by a person who's a member of the Yeshiva University's Board of Trustees, and he asks me in front of all these elegant, elderly, wealthy people, Rabbi Rakefet, what is your opinion about Shira Chadasha? And I told him, in my opinion, it is conservative Judaism. And I want to give you a little example. And I took this man and I said to him, tell me, let's give him the name Yisrael. Tell me, Yisrael, if you were attending Kabbalat Shabbat and a 28-year-old girl was davening Kabbalat Shabbat and she goes into ecstasy with Lachadodi and she's jumping around and up and down, and tell me, are you looking at her or looking at your sitter? If you're looking at her, you're not a Jew. If you're looking at your sitter, you are not a man. By the way, I just paraphrased the Rav in his testimony in the Mount Clemens case in 1955. It appears in Sanctity of the Synagogue, men and women and sexual tension, etc. I got to tell you, with that witticism, I run the argument. Everyone agreed, all the elderly women there who control hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars sitting in the King David Hotel, that little pauper, that poor kid from the Bronx, Ani Rothkopf won the debate, Noah. Right there with that statement. Was I telling the truth? Of course not. It's conservative Judaism and it bothers me for a million other halachic reasons. But in order to put this wise guy down, show me the halacha where it says in Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch that you need a machitzer in the shul. I challenge you. Eugene, I want you to find that halacha. Look in Torah Chaim. Look, start today. Let Edna help you. Let anyone help you who you want. You will not find that halacha. But there's a certain rhythm, a certain way we live, a certain lifestyle. So you see, when we allow it, and you understand from the New York Times point of view, men and women are equal. What's wrong? Men and women are equal. Men and women should earn the same thing for the same job. The same. We have in the Israeli army, we have fools here who fall for every line in the New York Times. The Israeli army have combat units with women. Rabbeinu Shalom, how do you put women in combat units? Have you ever been in a war? Have you fought in a war? I fought in two wars. Let me tell you something. I want to ask you a simple question. Where do you find the bathroom in a battleground? I don't want to go into more detail. We don't have to spell everything out. But just try to understand what I just said. Where do you find the bathroom in a battleground? Okay? You have men, you have women, not only that. God have mercy, what's involved in war, what's involved with physical effort, their bodies are built differently. And a woman is in infinite more danger than a man. Don't you understand that? If a man is captured, okay, he can go through hell. If a woman is captured, she can go through hell 1,000 times over more than a man. I don't have to elaborate. So, you understand, the New York Times, with all due respect, we're idiots in Israel if we emulate the New York Times. We're not toshavim on this level. So you see, this feminism is a tremendous challenge today. And right away, women were angry at me in Flatbush that I said something against a woman being a rabbi. She can be a Hasidic rabbi. You all heard my lecture last year. I gave a major lecture with endless sources, and I proved my point, and no one can disagree with me. No one can disagree. Rabbitson Kanyevsky is Haredit. It's Rav Alyoshev's daughter. It's Rav Kanevsky's wife. She's married to a nephew of the Chazon Ish. I mean, Ribbon Shalom, she's the granddaughter of Rabbi Levine. And if she isn't the biggest Hasidic Rebbe in this generation, I don't know who is. You read the weekend papers, you didn't see the bracha you'll get, you don't know men, women lined up to get a bracha from her. Believe me, if I didn't have to waste too much time from learning, I'd also line up to get a bracha from her. I'm a Litvak, so I have the learning problem. If you read the weekend papers, Makar Rishon, the interview with my classmate, Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Shach, we were in Bernard Revel together, about his father, you should read that interview. Moshe, would that open your eyes to why he didn't get along with his father for so many years? You'll see what's involved there with the mother's death and the learning and the yeshiva. The past week's Makar Rishon, the Yukon, the magazine, the picture is Rabbi Ephraim Shach. So you see, but for a woman to be a rabbi, she can't be in a Beit Din. She can't be an Eid L'Kiyum Davar. So to me, what Rabbi Avi Weiss did, giving ordination, calling Sarah Horowitz a rabbah, is incorrect. It's a slippery slope. It's a snowball falling down the mountain. We're going further and further and further and breaking down the Torah gestalt, the Torah lifestyle. And these women, five people, 395 people were happy with me, but five people wanted to kill me. They said our daughter got married and the rabbah had a bracha under the chuppah. Quote, end quote. Thanks. From the New York Times point of view, why can't a woman be a rabbi? And by the way, I'm giving her more credit. A Chassidic Rebbe is a lot more than a rabbi. But that, halachically, is not a problem. The maid of Lutmir was Chassidic Rebbe. People went to her for a bracha. what was it? Chana Rachel Webermacher, if I have the name correctly. And we have in the Torah Sioni, in the Dati Sioni world today, you have Yamima Rochav Mizrahi. She's mamish. I would stand online to get a bracha from her. So she's a Rebbe. No two ways about it. She was my daughter's classmate. Yeah. She gave up a big legal practice. What a woman. Yeah. What knowledge. What a
husband.
Husband's a Rosh Yeshiva.
But no, two of them are lawyers.
Yeah, two of them are lawyers. But she is.
Yamima
Rothschild Mizrahi. She is something.
Wow. But you're not allowed to go in and watch her on the...
The only women. Only women are allowed to watch her on the website.
Two different worlds.
Right. When I'm on my son-in-law's chair and he's working on me, I hear Divrei Tori Yamima Mizrahi. I couldn't believe me. She was saying something I said in Shia. She said it 10 times better. I went back to the Kollel last year and said, let me tell you, I have Divrei Tori from this woman. It's better than what I said last week. I said over.
So
you see, this is one level that frightens me greatly. And even Rabbi Rubin, as liberal as he wants to be, I ask him one simple question. How would the Rav react to a woman leading the tefillah, being a shliach tzibur? I don't want to be in the room when Yitzchak Rubin asks our Rebbe that question. The Rav of the 50s or 60s, there'd be a hole in the ceiling. That's all I can tell you. Right or wrong? What do you say? Right. Baruch Hashem, Yitzchak admits I'm right. I haven't said a word yet, Anacha, but go ahead. Yeah.
There's something that Rav Rubin is saying all along, though.
Yeah.
When you say conservative movement, you've been dealing with the JTS. The fact is, the people in the conservative movement don't keep halacha. They don't care about that.
You're describing JTS today. Go back to 1902.
Yeah, but the fact is that these people, all the people you're describing here, are all fully, they want to keep Torah. They're keeping it. I mean, you mentioned the Chabad earlier. I mean, that's the big excuse. So, well, they may believe that the Rebbe is God, but at least they keep Torah.
I want to tell you something. If that's your understanding of all my lectures on the conservative movement, I am in trouble. I've not made myself clear.
But the conservative movement always had a dichotomy between the membership and the rabbis.
No.
The members never, they were really before.
And
emotionally, it wasn't good for them to be before.
And
they didn't want to use the word.
And what do you have today? And what do you have today? What's the dichotomy? What are the people on the street?
It's exactly, so what?
So what? Well, I don't understand. If you keep Shabbos and you eat treif, that's okay. I don't understand.
No.
Keep Chabad out of it. Chabad is an island unto itself. Yeah. But that's exactly my point. Don't worry about the slippery slope.
David Hartman gave up sack for this. I don't say Walmart at all. But let's deal with the man who wrote Minhag.
Yeah. And he said you could give one. I'll come to him. I'll come to him in great detail. I have to develop. I know what I want to say about it.
Okay.
Good question. That question is good. But your question is not. His question is not good because he's looking at the conservative movement the year 2012. And I'm looking at it in 1912.
Do you think that these people are
going to
start driving their Shabbos?
No, they can change. Today it's very easy to keep Shabbos. But they can change Judaism 1,000 ways over. And you got one tremendous example with the service, with the aliyah, with everything going on. But I'll give you another example. I want to deal with homosexuality. Did you ever dream that this now has become a mass movement within the Orthodox world? Turning homosexuality into a normative stance.
The Rav went crazy already
in the 70s when the New York Times thinking liberals first broached this idea. Today, in the United States of America, I could be fined, I could be arrested, that I'm being prejudiced. I'm not prejudiced, chas v'chalilah.
Homophobic,
whatever the word is. I've had students with terrible homosexual problems. I helped them, I guided them, I referred them. I have to tell you, two cases that I had hands-on, both worked out very well, and they were classic examples of what causes some of the homosexuality. One of them was the only child in a family of all girls. He was the youngest, And that's one of the causes. All he had was a feminist influence. The other one was an only child with an overbearing mother. And it was classic, literally classic. But they got psychological help. Today the tragedy is that no one's going to go for help. Why you already? Why you held the conference? Rabbi Yeruchim Levavitz, I don't want to mention, he mentions his name, his yichus, who he comes from, that's his great-grandfather, the Mira Mashgiach, and he gets up in front of audiences in New York and Cleveland. He's become already, it's a preaching cycle, and he says, I can't help myself, I was born this way, you have to understand me, you can't, no one is saying, throw him out of the shul, no one is saying, God forbid you should speak evilly to him. But what we're creating is an atmosphere that this is normative. And no one suffers on this topic more than I do, because 30 years ago in the Kollel, sitting right here in front of me, was the rabbi who became the head of the Orthodox homosexual movement, my own Talmud. And he debated with me. He wouldn't, it's homosexually normal. This years later, I said, what do you mean it's normal? It's not normal. It's not normative. And no, you have to realize that this is the way God made us and we can't change. So I said, so what do you do with a pasuk in the Torah? And he went into a whole sefer, a whole pashanut that I can't even repeat. But I told you, that's one of two letters I have never answered in my life. I've answered every letter I ever received in 52 years of teaching Torah. I did, that's one of two letters I know. He's saying, hey, he set me up from England. Someone wrote to me, Kvod, Harav Rakefet, Vahulu, Vahulu, what is your opinion about this interpretation? And I knew right away I'm being set up. I saw, and then later he published his whole Chiddush, Lotishkevu Mishkevei Zachar, what it means, and it's become a whole book. A whole book is available, and they quote it, and this is frightening. Because here you take the New York Times has crept into our mentality 100%. And the tragedy is, when it's normative, why seek help? There's no feeling of insecurity.
And
well, the letter that came out now that everyone signed on from was written by my own Talmud from this Kollel, who's one of the main teachers in Chovei Torah. They composed the letter. You're not familiar with the letter. Natty Helfgott's letter. It's 67, the Orthodox rabbi signed on. Among them, I know at least 50 out of the 60 or out of the 70.
Well, I'm sorry,
the letter essentially says they're to be treated with respect, they're to be given aliyah, they're allowed to daven for the Amid, they count for the minyan, it's normative, yeah. They can't help themselves. But it creates that same atmosphere of normativeness, and why seek help? And it's very frightening. And it's not that we hold any differently halacha l'maisa, but there's a difference in how you approach it and how you speak about it publicly. You can't let the world get the impression, Lo tishkavu mishkavei zacha, as my student said to me, Chalamoy Sukkos, and got me sick. And this is a student who studied here. This is a student whose father is an Orthodox rabbi. This is a student, to quote Nachum, who shomer Shabbos, right? He said, Rebbe, your ideas on feminism and homosexuality will not play well on the Upper West Side. No, I'm not one to Moshe. I'm not one to at a loss of ways. I said to him, I don't want to mention his name. I said, my dear student, why do I give a hoot about the Upper West Side? When Ari Goldman's book came out and spoke about premarital relations on the Upper West Side, Isha Shabbi and Abi Aser, I said, I spoke on the West Side, I came out against premarital relations, people wanted to kill me, so I'm going to judge Yiddishkeit by the Upper West Side. By the way, Ari, by the way, I said to him,
but the Upper West Side isn't normal.
Moshe, hold on, I said to him, tell me, what do you do with the pasuk in the Torah, Lo lishkavu mishkavei zacha? You know what he said to me? Rebbe, the rabbis interpreted other pasukim. We have to reinterpret that pasuk. I quote, end quote. That's exactly what the kid in the seminary asked. When they asked the kid. No, a kid. a very successful lawyer in his 50s, who had been my Talmud 30 years earlier, a fine Talmud Chacham, a Yerushalayim. So he said, the Upper West Side, he's quoting not just himself. And I said to him, what you're saying, that we, the rabbis, have to reinterpret it, that's Blue Greenberg. When there's a rabbi, he said to me, you're right, that is Blue Greenberg. I said to him, so were you different? A conservative student at the seminary was asked 10 years ago, I have it in black and white, when they started with this homosexual thrust, they said to him, but it's a pasuk in the Torah. He said, we've reinterpreted other pasuk, we'll reinterpret this. This is the fear. And here you have to draw the line. And I agree with Yitzchak, this is not just Chovevei Torah. The original publicity came out of YU, and believe me, it shocked me and frightened me. Finally, I'm kind of 1 second. Finally, I have to tell you, in my debate with this fine balabas from the Upper West Side, son of a rabbi, Talmid Chacham, I finally said to him, wow. You're a feminism, I'm a fanatic. That means Rabbi Soloveitchik, Lula Murray. I think the way the Rav does, what can I do? Homosexuality, I'm a fanatic, rule it away. I said, you know something? The Haredi world is laughing all the way to the bank as you speak. That bothered him. See, that bothered him. You understand? That the Haredi world locks the chais famuns and says, this is what happens when you're open-minded, this is what happens when you're like Rakepet, this is what happens when you don't dress in black and you don't have a beard, you don't have payas, and you walk around looking like a guy and you justify it, and you say you're dressing like the Chaim Brisker and the Chafetz Chaim, etc., etc. These are the results. The Haredi world is laughing all the way to the bank. Oh, that shook him up. He said, Rebbe, there you have a point. That bothers me. Baruch Hashem. Yes, Matan.
About this letter.
Right. You know what happened? It circulated in Rabbi Sinai.
I read it. And it said specifically, you know, it definitely reaffirmed the...
I understand.
I don't understand which points on the letter.
What frightens me is the letter should have stated, first of all, I don't know if there was a need for the letter, but that's the first question. But the minute you write a letter like that, accept them and did that, the letter should have stated that we are not happy with the situation. It is not normative. It is not desirable. It is forbidden by the Torah.
It
says that I didn't get the feeling that was the thrust. When I saw the letter, what came out of the letter to me was, don't throw them out of the shul, give them an aliyah, let them daven from a... How can you have a homosexual lead the davening on Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah? Just think for a minute. How can you have it? Forget about Machaba. How can you have it? How can you have it? Didn't leave.
Have a wife beat
it up? Absolutely not. But it didn't leave me with the feeling that this is an abomination. That's what bothered me about the letter. It should have quoted the word and said abomination. Fine. But the whole letter, right away, it's a reflection of the slippery slope that began with YU, and YU, you don't know what I suffered. I was in England at the time. England is a conservative community with a small C, and they don't know what's going on in YU. They think it was in the base medrash, you know, the publicity it got, that 800 people, they didn't have enough seats. People had to be turned away. I don't know where it was, but I thought it was in Belfast. In London, they thought it was mamash in the basement.
Yeah,
with Jerry Blau, with everything.
My father said that it was, that the Rosh Yeshiva, a lot of them came out against it, they shouldn't have had it.
No, yeah, but that was after the fact.
My father gave me the impression that a lot of them didn't want it to happen before it happened.
So they agree with me. Fine, I'm happy to hear that. But Matan, that's my... thrust when I read the letter, that's what impressed me. And then you have to ask the whole question, who needs this in writing? That they have to be chasanim, they have to be this, that. You understand? What are they reacting to? But it frightens me because this has become now a public topic, and you have people who, as Nachum said, Shomer Shabbos, and we can't help ourselves. Yes?
I think you're very right when you told them, like, your last line to him, because I think a big problem with these people is they live in these
I'll come to it. Okay. Now, the third problem that I want to mention, of course, is the problem that haunts us for the last 150 years, the problem of pluralism. And here again, you can see the gevatoshav, you can see the argument, the debate, pluralism.
Pluralism means allow other movements in the...
You'll understand in one second. You go to the... Define what I'm angry at, what I'm upset with. And remember, I agree there's a counter-reaction, and I agree it's a delicate problem, but I'll tell you what upsets me. Go to the Chovevei Torah website, go to the Chovevei Torah catalog, look at their faculty. On the faculty, last time I looked, which is within the last year, two women are listed faculty members by the title rabbi. One conservative ordination, one reform ordination. Now, I ask you, pluralism.
What kind of institution has a conservative rabbi as a teacher anyway?
Chovevei Torah has. Why seek them?
I'm asking, other than that.
I don't know of any other Torah institution that has female rabbis. So they answered me, well, this one teaches psychology, pastoral psychology. So I said to them, you know, if she's there as a psychologist, why the rabbi? Why the title rabbi? And they double talked me. I want to tell you, I don't like people who double talk. Because the person I was walking home with in the hotel knows me many years, and he told me, oh, you're absolutely right. After Shabbos, I'm contacting the people, and we're going to take it off the website. Nah, nechtikatag. I checked a week later, and it was still there, and it will be there. Now, look, pluralism... The Chovevei Torah crowd, Avi Weiss, and all that goes with it, have made this into a major topic. I'm fully aware that there's...
So how are you defining the word pluralism?
Pluralism is recognition that you can say to students, Rabbi Feierstein, I hope I don't have her right name because I'm not here to embarrass her, but I recall it was something like that, yeah. Rabbi Feierstein, a graduate of the Hebrew Union College, is your teacher. It means you are acknowledging a woman can be a rabbi. You're acknowledging that a woman can have reform ordination.
Wait a minute. You're asking a basic question.
Can
Reb Meir learn from Acher?
Say that.
Right?
Well aware of Reb Meir.
We know the answer.
I don't know, that's debated among the
Rabbi Meir could learn from Acher.
But he's mentioned as Acher.
Rabbi Meir could learn from Acher.
Can you learn Torah from somebody
who's not
some people say no.
It's not a question. Rabbi Meir, don't.
The first word from Yitro. The whole Jewish,
yeah, but Jitro, Rabbi Meir, that's not the point there. The point is recognition. And this takes us back to the tremendous problem. Recognition of the fact that you can have choice in Judaism to be Reform, conservative, or orthodox. Recognition that Torah and mitzvah do not demand obedience. That's the question of pluralism. That there's no nasa v'nishma. Rabbi Hirsch raised the question in Germany. Rabbi Hirsch fought for the secession law, 1876.
Yeah.
And this problem wants us...
Did the Rebbe of Salvation agree with Hirsch?
Half and half. So you say, now you're double talking. No, I'm not double talking anything. Yitzchak, calm down. Let me teach now. I'm not double talking anything. The problem came back in the United States to haunt us. And Rabbi Belkin raised the issue in the late 1930s for the first time. Not Rabbi Belkin, Rabbi Revel. And at that time, the Rav and the other rabbis insisted that the Orthodox leave the combined rabbinical movement in the New England area. You can read about it in Bernard Revel. So at that time there was unity, and they took a very aggressive stand. Rabbi Jacob Agus had to resign his membership in a joint rabbinical body because that was the decree of Rabbi Revel and Rabbi Soloveitchik. Following World War II, the issue came up very strongly in 1956. You all know I've lectured on it extensively. And there was the tremendous machloket between the 11 Rosh Yeshiva who totally ousted participation and the Rav who refused to sign. But we have to remember that the Rav came out with a long interview in the Morgenjournal, one of the few times he went public at that moment in life, where he explained total, complete, absolute opposition to reform and conservative in theological and religious matters. He said, if the synagogue council only deals with general issues such as Jewish welfare, economic issues, Zionism, anti-Semitism, we should stand united. When it deals with religious issues, we cannot stand united. And synagogue council went on to adopt in its bylaws that any religious issue has to be unanimous, meaning the Orthodox were giving the power of veto. Now, that concept of the Rav is one that Yeshiva University has lived with. That is Rabbi Belkin's concept when the synagogue council honored him along with Finkelstein and Gluck at a dinner. I believe it was in the mid-60s already. So Rabbi Belkin stood behind, Rabbi Soloveitchik stood behind Rabbi Belkin and justified his participation. All that we can understand, this is not talking upon theological or religious issues. The problem today comes to the forefront, and I give you the classic example that just happened this Hanukkah and made headlines over the entire American Anglo-Jewish press. And what happened was, and again, the feminist issue is very secondary here, but look what happened. Four pioneer female rabbis met in Boston for a joint Hanukkah celebration. And the article's on to describe the rabbah, along with Sally Prezand, Sandy Sasso, Amy Eilberg, participated as a joint Hanukkah service at Temple Reyim in West Newton. The Synagogue Council of Massachusetts, which is sponsoring this event, says it's the first time all four female rabbis have appeared publicly in one place. The program included a Hanukkah candle lighting by every female rabbi in attendance in that New England synagogue. Headlines quoting from press releases, first learned rabbis in the United States celebrate Hanukkah at historic event, Newton, Massachusetts. Four pioneer female rabbis together in Newton. Now, from what I gather, Sandy Prezant, I know it's a fact, was the first Reform rabbi. Amy Eilberg, if I'm not mistaken, was the first conservative rabbi. Sandy Sasso probably is the first Reconstructionist rabbi. Sarah Horowitz, of course, is the rabbah of Avi Weiss. What troubles me here is not the feminist aspect. What troubles me here is look at the statement you're making on a religious act. Four rabbis coming together, doing the same thing, totally equal. This is pluralism. And this is my problem with it.
So it's PR. Why is the college
camp? You need a rabbi. It's got PR today, PR tomorrow. This is the gist of the problem. This is the way it was interpreted. This is the way it was publicized. This is the agenda. Call it what you wish.
It's not a question of being malamitzkot. It's a question of understanding where we're at, what the implications are, the ideas that we are conveying. And this pluralism on this level, Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Belkin, any name you will give from the greater YU world of Gedolei Torah would be absolutely, totally opposed. You all know that when the Rav's good friend, Rabbi Shubau, passed away, the Rav did not go into the conservative temple for the funeral. He stood outside. And this is the Rav now, and that's a fact. And this is the same Rav who refused to sign the Issa on synagogue council. So you see, it is critically important to say to the world, yes, all Jews are one, and all Jews are friends, and all Jews are a brotherhood. But when it comes to Torah mitzvot, we have to observe. We have to surrender. We have to live with Torah. When you take a pluralistic attitude, such as what I just described, I believe that that message is totally lost. So this is my fear. It's on three levels, what I see in the headlines today, being widely discussed. It's not just I illustrate it this way. When you look at the press releases of who Chobevei Torah is, what they are, what they represent, you will see that open institution with emphasis on femininity, emphasis on pluralism, open to the world, and this is their stress, this is their thrust, this is their stunts, this is their gestalt. And here I am frightened, because with all the best of intentions, look what happened with the conservative movement. And if someone comes and asks me today, the rabbi or the assistant rabbi is from Chobevei Torah, I will only tell him, only answer, you have to judge each individual on his own merits. I hope that Chobevei Torah will remain Orthodox. I hope that they will remain from. I hope that the concept of surrender will guide them. I hope they will recognize that these are tremendous challenges, problems, but nevertheless, we have to retain our status of ger, not be swallowed up by the toshav. I hope that this will happen. Am I certain it will happen? Absolutely not. It is very frightening, because when you look at the conservative movement's history, you see that there are parallels. Once you allow the masses, once you allow the echo of modernity, once you allow the echo of Western civilization, once you allow the echo of the New York Times to influence you, you lose your sense of balance. And who could ever dream from 1902 to the year 2010 that Arnold Eisen, the chancellor of the seminary, attends a non-kosher reception for a mixed marriage that took place on Shabbat. You understand? Who could ever imagine it would come to that? And yet you can say, you know, what's wrong? It's America. It's the president's daughter. What did he do wrong? He didn't eat there. He didn't come on Shabbos. He only came after Shabbos. But the truth of the matter is, he only came after Shabbos, but what a statement he made. Now, let me end off with some Divrei Torah from the Rav. Gevet Toshav Anochi Machem. Yeah, there's no question that this is our challenge from time immemorial. How do we balance out the two worlds? And the Rav on Pashat Toldot, Vayigdalu hanarim vayihi Esav ish odeyat sayet ish sadeh v'yakov ish tam yoshev ohalim. So you have here a description. Two different sons. Esav, the man of the field, the man who left the tent, the man who was out in the big world, And Yaakov ish tam yoshev v'chavani. No, to be Yaakov Avinu, to be a tzaddik, to be shoma mitzvah, not difficult. He's in a tent. He's secluded. He's in a ghetto. That's why Yitzchak felt he doesn't need the worldly brachas. He doesn't need the economic brachas. He doesn't need the materialistic brachas. He's not going to be out there struggling. Esav should get the bracha. He's going to be out there. He's going to struggle. He needs the blessings. And Rivka felt, chas v'chalila, we should not prepare the Jews for all the vicissitudes of life. No one knows what's going to happen. No one has a guarantee where they'll be, what they will struggle with, what their quests will be, what their challenges will be. You start off life, I can just look around this room. A few of us started off in the Bronx. Imagine if someone would have told us at the age of 16, you're going to wind up in Yerushalayim, you're going to wind up in Mitzpah Yericho, you're going to wind up the Israeli reality. You would laugh. Not correct. Right now we're in the Bronx, we're in a ghetto, we know every stone, we know every brick, we know every syntax of the language. We can handle ourselves. Who needs a bracha? You know what's going to be in life. And that's why Rivka was correct. That's why Yaakov had to get the bracha. You're not always going to be able to sit in a tent. You're not always going to be able to sit in the ghetto. And the Rav said so beautifully, this is why the Jews had to go down to Egypt. Ki ger yiyah zaracha ve'eretz lo lahem. Why did they have to go down? Why did they have to be enslaved? Why did they have to live in Egyptian culture? And Mori Rebbe said, in order to give the Jews the Torah, God had to be sure they could retain their uniqueness. To retain your uniqueness in the tent of Eretz Canaan, that is not the challenge. The challenge is to go down to Egypt and retain your uniqueness there. Egypt at that time, the most cultured, the most advanced technologically, what a civilization, what a country, what a challenge, what a brilliant, scintillating New York Times. There,
Cairo Times.
There you have to retain your uniqueness. And only if the Jews could prove that they could, then they're worthy of Matan Torah, Kabbalat Omar Chut Shomayim. And this will explain also, this was my thought, and then I heard the Rav say it, he said it. I always thought I had a wonderful thought, and then I'm listening to a recording of the Rav out of, he said it in Moria, right after Shir, when he would give Divrei Agada, right, Divrei Agada. And he said a meritic word, and he said, wow, Baruch Shekivanti Ladas Gedoylem, something he said in the 50s, I first heard in the 2000s, and had it uprooted my own ability to credit it to myself. And the word is very simple. How do you bless the kids Friday night? So you bless the girls, you sing Simech HaMakim Kesara Rivka Rachel Leah. Beautiful, I can understand that. No, how should you bless the boys? Yisrael Elohim, Ki Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And instead, what do you say? Ki Ephraim uku Menashe. Why were Ephraim uku Menashe Zaycha? What did they have that the other HaKadoshim, Kadoshe Elyon, didn't have? And the Rav said so beautifully, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all lived in Eretz Canaan. They all lived in the Ohel or near the Ohel. Ephraim and Menashe were the first kids to be raised in Golus. And exactly. Once you live in dual culture, wow, and they remained religious, committed. This is why we say to these young kids on a Friday night, we don't know where you'll be in life. We don't know what will happen to you in life. We don't know what challenges you will face in life. But whatever happens, we want you to take the example from Ephraim and Menashe. No matter where you will be,
you have to Yisimcha Elokim Kefraim Menashe. And finally, and this too is Rakefet's drasha that he gave for Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein, and I wrote it all out. I thought I was all original, and generations later, I heard the Rav in Moriah, word by word, Baruch Shekivanti Ladas Gedoylem. And both of us ultimately were not original. It all goes back to a Malkut. And what's the drive? It's very simple. The same continuity, same thought. Gentlemen, look what happens. Yaakov Avinu is sick. They tell Yosef, he rushes, right? Avicha Choleh rushes, grabs Ephraim and Menashe, and they come to Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov Avinu says, Mi Eila.
It's a record.
Come on. What's the matter with you? You're a grandfather? No, you don't reckon, you wouldn't know your grandchildren. God, they're the apple of my eye. I have a great grandson. When he's present, I'm in heaven. You won't recognize your grandchildren, Yehuda, me, Ayla. What kind of stupid question is that? So the Malbim says so beautifully. Rakefet said, Rothkopf said it in his drasha with Rabbi Goldstein. The Rav says it in Moriah. But the Rav says, I and I looked it up. It's right there in the Malbim. What happened was very simple. Ephraim and Menashe worked among the Egyptian cultured, sophisticated elements of society. No? You know, they had a dress. How did they have to dress? They had to dress like Egyptians. They had to shave like Egyptians. The Gemara talks about, right, that they had to comb their hair like the Romans because they had contact with them. You had to be one of the boys. So whenever they went to visit their grandfather, they went home first. They changed. They put on their bekesha, put on their shtraimel. Here they had no time. Avicha Choleh. They were rushed. Once they're rushed, they had no time to change. Yaakov Avinu started to shake. Mi'ela. What kind of grandchildren do I have? What kind of Gentile grandchildren? How are they acting? How are they dressed? Where is their Judaism? And their father answers so beautifully, Banai Haim, Ashenatan Lakim Bazat. God gave them to me here. This is the reality. We live in dual culture. Elia, Ilya, Ger V'Toshab. And Yaakov Avinu says to his son, Mein Zun, Yizakirach, you are correct. And that's why Litvishi Yiddish, just like the Rav says, Rav Moshe, quotes Rav Moshe, Mein Zun, Yizakirach, you are correct. And he quotes, and he gives them a blessing, the Yidku L'Rov, no Bekerev Ha'aretz. V'yikarvechem Shmi, V'shem Abotai Abraham V'Yitzchak. It's a brilliant. He gives them a blessing. Yes, you're right. They live here. They live in Egypt. They live in America. They live in Western culture. They live out of the tent. They live in the Sadeh. They have to be good Jews in where they live. V'yidku L'Rov, Bekerev Ha'aretz. Be good Toshavim, but remember, on certain issues, you have to remain a Ger. Vayikarahem Shmei Mabotai, Avraham V'Yitzchak. They have to remain a Ger. What an analysis. That's Torah, that's the challenge, that's where we're at. Those are my fears. Halavai, I should be wrong. Halavai, I should be proven wrong. But I tremble. Because Shira Chadasha is here to say, the innovative minion in Dishu is here to stay, and we all know Rabbi Avi Weiss, first cousin to Rabbi Mori Willig. What a difference between the two first cousins. The challenge is right. I will come to Sperber next week. Take my word for it. I'm not running away from Sperber. Gentlemen, next week to get in and see the Rebbe make a fool out of himself is $99,000. But since I'm making a fool out of myself, I have to be mindful of the money. So what did we do today? We'll forget about the money for the IOU list, but believe me, next week, first I have to begin, let me just see, first I have to begin, I have to begin with Sperber.
have a lot more. All right, I'll make a fool out of myself first, and then I'll deal with Mesorah, Sperver, and end off with my Hitkatvut with some of the leaders in Chovevei Torah. So Danny, you've gotten an answer to your question. For the time being, in 50 years we may have to revise it one way or the other. I hope in 50 years you can say Rabbi Rubin was right, I was all wrong. Okay? I hope so. Do I think you'll be able to say that in 50 years? I'm very frightened. I'm very hesitant. I'm very diffident because I've lived Torah history and I see it before my eyes. And we have to discuss Danny Sperber and Sora, what Yitzchak is referring to. It has to be hit head on and dealt with intelligently, and dealt with the way the Rav would deal with it. That's all. I'm a Talmud of the Rav.
The two formal brothers, they would not agree with Sperber, would they?
They don't agree with Sperber 100%, 1,000,000%. Okay. They've already taken on Sperber. Mm-hmm. But But anyway, to reiterate, what did we do today? Fine, today I spoke about why I see some comparisons between JTS and Chovevei Torah, why I am frightened, and I leave you to make your own decision. It's not a decision that you can make today or tomorrow. Time will tell. It is interesting that Rabbi Avi Weiss did not go further beyond that one time woman being Mekabelet Shabbat, and from what I hear, there was opposition within the congregation per se. So you see, you're dealing with Shomer Shabbos people, as Nachum says, you're not dealing with Mechalalei Shabbos who want innovation and changes. On the other hand, excuse me?
It's more than that. You don't think he thinks that he's doing the most important thing in the world, and not necessarily. He's living in this New York Times bubble, he thinks that the things he's doing are actually necessary.
You fellas think the New York Times bubble is small. I think the New York Times bubble is much bigger. We may be in the bubble, not the New York Times.
I remember the week that all these things happened.
I was there. I was there in America.
The Jewish Week wrote an article the week after that said that a lot of the members of the community didn't necessarily disagree with what he did. They disagreed with how he did it. They sent an email
Friday
morning. They said if there was a discussion.
Right. They felt it was too soon. It should have been discussed. To say that, but this is what.
Let's go to Wyoming and see how much scale it applies there. Okay. They're in the five boroughs of New York. They don't realize that in half the United States, Wyoming.
Gentlemen, okay, one second. So Baruch Hashem. Right. Next week, major material in the Sunday class with the Summer Rosh. I wish I had the background. If you knew Asaf's research, Professor Simcha Asaf, Rabbi Simcha Asaf, whatever you know him by, who is Rabbi Simcha Asaf? We'll talk about it Sunday. His research on punishment in Jewish law throughout the ages.
And will deal with that topic?
Yeah. What? No, it's a major article, Onshin B'Toldot. He wrote Tupat HaGaonim. No, that's his grandson. That's his grandson, Professor Simcha Asaf. You're talking Professor David Asaf, who wrote the book. I'm well aware of it. And next Monday, B'ezrat Hashem, I'll pick up with the swing to the right, and why there's no one in the world who should be more angry at the swing to the right than Aaron Rakefet. And from there, I'll go into Mesorah, and you can raise the question with the Rabbi Dr. Professor Danny Sperber. What I want to show you guys, think Torah. This is a Malava Malker in Flatbush. Just now. Oh. And I want to show you over what type of tables I was able to give the Devrei Torah. But one second, do you recognize this picture? Who was here yesterday?
I know the guy on the left. Who's the guy on the right?
That's, who was here yesterday?
I wasn't here.
Yeah, you're going.
He's the guy who walked into class.
Who's that?
Beryl Phillips.
Who is that?
It was a BMT boy. Was at his home.
There's Malka down below.
Okay, no. Here. One second.
Was he the rabbi of the shul?
Yeah, these are some Talmidim. This is I.A. Liebman, that's Feiner. That's Elihu Terkel. This represents 50 years of teaching. One second.
Where's Elihu Terkel?
Here.
He was one of the Kinti Yeshiva Frisbee to show it in Shuva?
No, it's not the Turkel from Bar Ilan, it's the psychologist.
With Danny
For Danny Rottenberg.
Could be. Could be. Here's the table of food. Take a look. Hashtia kadat ein ones. They do not lack for kosher food in Flatbush. And each one here has a story. Here it gives you an idea of the crowd. This is the rabbi of the shul. That's the assistant rabbi. The assistant rabbi was able to tell me he's listened to over 200 shir. Mine, he knew them inside out. He was shooting at me material from time immemorial. Anyone recognize that this is the assistant rabbi, Rabbi Shiffman? Mean anything to you? He's a colleague of yours. Not related. He's in the Ritz, Shosha Big, the Ritz Smicha program, you don't even know your own colleague. He's now a Smicha student. That's Rabbi Vinegar. Mean anything to anyone? Reuven Vinegar.
That's Reuven Vinegar?
There he is.
Doing the BFD.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
That's Vinegar.
There's Eli Turkel.
Yeah. With Danny Rottenberg.
So I want to tell you, we're living in a world that these pictures were taken Saturday night, and Beryl gives them to me Sunday morning. He takes them, develops them, prints them, all in his house. In Florida, I'm speaking in Val Harbor, and this guy is there. And after the shiur, he walks over and gives me, can anyone tell me how this is done?
Yeah, they have
takes them, prints them in the camera. Where do you print them?
They have a little machine.
Yeah.
And they make magnets at weddings now, and they give out people.
They give out, oh my gosh. Anyway, gentlemen, until we meet again in health and happiness, that's for Dad. Moshe, how long will you be here?
I'm leaving.